Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made history Tuesday in Singapore, becoming the first American and North Korean leaders to meet. Following a private meeting, they held talks with other officials. Mr. Trump spoke with the North Korean leader as reporters watched.
Mr. Chairman, it's a great honor to be with you, and I know we'll have tremendous success together, and we'll solve a big problem, a big dilemma that until this point has been unable to be solved. I know that working together, we will get it taken care of.
Earlier, Mr. Kim said it was not easy getting to this point, but the old prejudices and practices have been overcome. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres commended both for pursuing a diplomatic solution and trying to break what he called the cycle of tension of last year.
Peace and verifiable denuclearization must remain the clear and shared goals.
Defense priorities analyst Benjamin Friedman, however, expressed doubt the North would agree to the key U.S. demand of complete and verifiable denuclearization.
I think the North Koreans have strong reasons that they want to keep their nuclear weapons and are not willing to trade that, probably, period. Or if they are, it's for stuff that is beyond what we're willing to offer and give them. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think the best we can do in this meeting is probably make interim steps, some sort of working outline, if you will, towards an agreement that achieves substantially less than that in terms of limiting the range, maybe, of their missiles.
Mr. Trump said the two leaders forged a good relationship. Mr. Kim called the meeting a good prelude for peace. The forces of eastern Libyan strongman Khalifa Haftar said they've seized several districts of the contested city Derna and vowed imminent liberation from its Islamist defenders. This is VOA News. There are growing concerns of an imminent assault on the Houthi rebel-controlled Yemeni port city of Hodeidah by coalition forces led by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Antonio Guterres is UN Secretary General.
What I say is that there was a lull, as I said, to allow for discussions, and I hope that that will allow us to avoid a battle.
UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs Mark Lowcock said it's vital to keep the port open.
7 million people are completely reliant every month on food, and more than 7 million on other assistance from humanitarian organizations. So Hodeidah is absolutely central to the preserving of life.
The U.S. said it's closely following developments. Reports indicate the Emiratis are giving all the U.N. 72 hours to get their personnel out of Hodeidah. 250,000 people could be impacted by an assault. A senior U.N. humanitarian official for Syria expressed alarm Monday about recent airstrikes in rebel-held Idlib province. Panos Moumsis said, "We may have not seen the worst of the crisis in that seven-year conflict."
We have seen in the last few weeks an escalation of even fighting between these groups that have taken place. We have come out with public statements of that, fightings that have taken place around health facilities, fightings that have taken place in multiple locations. So again, a special solution needs to be found with all these groups inside Idlib, because the current composition makes it highly explosive.
Idlib has drawn various rebel fighters and their families displaced by government victories elsewhere. Moumsis also says more than 900,000 were displaced in the country so far this year. That's the highest number in any four-month period of the entire conflict. Egypt Monday allowed more than 30 Ethiopians to leave for home following progress between the two countries over Ethiopia's controversial hydroelectric dam project on the Nile River. The Ethiopians have been detained for minor offenses, including immigration and trespassing. In Afghanistan, at least 12 were killed in a suicide attack in the capital, Kabul, Monday, hours before a ceasefire was set to go into effect. More than 30 were wounded as government workers awaited a bus. The Islamic State claimed responsibility. In Berlin, diplomats from Germany, France, Russia, and Ukraine ended inconclusively a meeting as Moscow and Kyiv remained far apart on how to use peacekeepers to implement a ceasefire. It was the first time in more than a year the foreign ministers of the four countries met on the separatist conflict in eastern Ukraine that has killed thousands over the past 4 years. A 2015 ceasefire has so far failed to halt the fighting. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
We'll be right back. morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Tuesday, June 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. The U.S. is asking that East African governments tighten the loopholes that allow illicit money from South Sudan to cross into regional capitals. And the government of Tanzania says that all unregistered bloggers and online forums should suspend their websites immediately or face criminal prosecution. Government critics and bloggers say that this is a move by the government of Tanzania to tighten control of internet content.
I mean, as a blogger, I do read a lot from what other people write, and I always used to enjoy reading these stories from the areas themselves. So we had bloggers all over the country. By suspending those, you pretty much cut off the source of the news that is closest to the subject.
Muberwa Bandio is a Tanzanian journalist who runs Kwanza Radio, an online platform. And regional lawmakers in East Africa say that they are concerned about the fate of 40 Ugandan women who were arrested in Kenya. The Kenyan authorities say that they are not aware of the arrests and their whereabouts of the women.
Most of the human trafficking cases we have here mostly are always concerning Ethiopians, but Ugandans, no. That sounds a bit peculiar.
Kenyan spokesman Charles Owino. Stay tuned, those stories and more are coming up right here on The Voice of America. And we start off in Tanzania, where the government says that all unregistered bloggers and online forums should suspend their websites immediately or face criminal prosecution. Government critics and bloggers say that this is a move by the government of Tanzania to tighten control of internet content. Muberwa Bandio is a Tanzanian journalist who runs Kwanza Radio, an online platform that draws some of its content from the numerous blogs in Tanzania. He tells me that this kind of government overreach is not surprising and is starting to affect all aspects of life in the country.
We use them. We use those as sources. So we have blogs that are just for some of the regions, you know, so we don't have to depend any news to come just from Dar es Salaam. So if you suspend the blog from there and I need to confirm the story from there, at least that source is gone for me. And it makes it harder for me to just get the news from the area. So it's really bad for all of us. I mean, as a blogger, I do read a lot from what other people write, and I always used to enjoy reading these stories from the areas themselves. So we had bloggers all over the country. By suspending those, you pretty much cut off the source of the news that is closest to the subject.
What has been the reaction from these bloggers, some of them that you know that you've been working with? What are they saying about this new order?
It's been outcry, you know, as it should. They don't think, I mean, it's the opposite of what we think, because people are going out there, look for these stories, write them up. Now, instead of them being paid for writing now, they're forced to pay. You know, we don't make much, I mean, almost nothing as bloggers. So at this point, we really don't know the intention of the government. People, we have a perception of what government wants, but it's hard to imagine that you have to write to pay that much for the blog that makes nothing. Virtually, people they just spend their time and money to inform the audience, but they still get forced to pay. So the reaction has been outcrying, and people are not happy. Not only bloggers, but even the people who read. You know, the audience is not happy.
Is this something that you feel that the bloggers or the general public was prepared for, given some of the changes that have been happening in Tanzania lately?
I don't think it was prepared for, but I think I saw it coming, you know. We started seeing how they wanted to control the outlet of the news. I mean, nowadays, the information directory from the State House is working. I mean, I'll say that it's working, but it's controlling any information going out. You have to depend for them to tell you where is the government, the president, what is he doing. Sometimes he's having meetings, and we only get information from the press secretary. So to me, that's already controlling the source of what is coming out, and you don't get opportunity of asking questions and digging deeper. So it'll be just a press release, say, this is where the president was, and this is what he did, this is what he talked. But really, I started seeing that they act like they have, all they did is just control the source of the information, and they want everybody to feed from one source, which is them.
What is the process for registering their blogs? What do they have to go through, and do they have to pay any money?
Oh, yes, they do have to pay. I don't remember exactly how much. I'm not sure if it was a million, but it's a lot of money for the bloggers, especially who don't make anything. It just doesn't make sense, as they were never explained to why you have to pay that much, whether you're a blogger or online content provider. You know, it was never said that this is what you need to do. You know, there are very few that seems to understand, and I'm not sure why few seem to have that support.
Has there been a situation where there's been national outcry from the citizens saying that the government needs to put a check on the bloggers?
No, not to that extent. You know, there have been some issues like, you know, the title not matching that very well with the content, but this is almost everywhere. And this is what I can tell you. Instead of just doing what they're doing, I think the government was supposed to put some classes or grades saying that, okay, you just deal with tabloid and make sure everybody knows that this is what you do.
So you are suggesting that the government should just have demanded that these bloggers classify their information as either tabloid or straight news or entertainment news instead of charging them money.
Yes, yes. And they do the same. It's like it's everywhere. They did with blogging. Now they come to the movies. I mean, if the movie's all about, you know, relationship and stuff, and you don't want them to really talk in that manner, you know, you don't want them to do this. You don't want the dancers to wear like this. I think the government is going too far. Try to control everything about Tanzanians, but you know, it's terrible here.
Muberwa Bandio is a Tanzanian journalist who runs Kwanza Radio, an online platform. Regional lawmakers in East Africa said that they are concerned about the fate of 40 Ugandan women who were arrested in the country. Kenyan authorities, meanwhile, said that they are not aware of the arrests and the whereabouts of the women. The families of the women are calling for their release. Moses Havyarimana has more on this story.
Last week, 40 Ugandan girls and women were arrested by the Kenyan authority after crossing the Busia border from Uganda. According to the Ugandan government, the women were stopped from two different buses from Uganda heading to Nairobi last Friday evening. Susan Nakauki is a lawmaker from Uganda.
And now these are Ugandans who are coming, hoping that they can also get better paying jobs. I mean in Kenya, but now they're in jail. The families have been trying to reach out to the county commissioner in Kenya, who has tried to help them since yesterday, but even he himself has failed to make headway when it comes to this.
The Uganda State Minister for East African Community Affairs, Julius Maganda, said that investigations have been launched to help both countries to reduce human trafficking.
So we referred this matter back to the county commissioner of Busia, Kenya, and the district resident commissioner of Busia, Uganda. They are handling it. The girls are still in the cells. They are 40, most of them young. We have even a 12-year-old girl. We suspect this may not entirely be coming to Kenya to try to survive. Would be human trafficking.
Kenya police spokesman Charles Owino said that he wasn't aware of the arrest of the 40 Ugandan girls and that his office will look into the case.
Most of the human trafficking cases we have here mostly are always concerning Ethiopians, but Ugandans, no. That sounds a bit peculiar.
The International Organization for Immigration reported that 1,840 Ethiopian and Somali immigrants were intercepted in Tanzania this year. Porous borderline between Kenya and Tanzania have been identified as the key entry points. However, Ugandan member of the East African Legislative Assembly, Matthias Kasamba, said that the East African citizens are facing challenges in crossing the borders.
Failure to appreciate that the purpose of putting there one border post is to facilitate free entry and exit of residents of any partner state. But it has become a blockade because they have very good looking buildings. The East Africans, we are facilitating travel. These are the local people, small in their size, but looking for opportunities. But they've been downgraded as second citizens in this region.
The East African Community Common Market Protocol allows free movement of citizens within the six member states. As human trafficking is on a rise in the region, authorities said that they have taken precautions as the freedom of movement can be misused by human traffickers to do their business. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Nairobi.
Still in East Africa, where Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has vowed to increase security in the country to curb the increasing crime rate in this East African nation. Speaking at the burial of a prominent member of parliament who was shot last week, Museveni said that he would provide more equipment to security personnel and improve intelligence units in and around the country. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report from Kampala, Uganda.
While addressing mourners at the burial ceremony of the slain member of the ruling party, parliamentarian Colonel Ibrahim Abiriga, who was gunned down last Friday, President Museveni called the assailants cowards and pigs.
Nobody will start a war with NRM and win. He will lose. He saw it here. And I thank the people of West Nile for supporting the UPDF.
We don't kill people. We fight. If there's a war to fight, we fight. You don't find a man in his house and you kill him and you think you are a pig.
President Museveni said the killing of Abiriga could have been politically motivated. He termed this as a miscalculated move. NRM stands for the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement Party. Museveni said his government has a bid to ensure there is security of persons and property.
I am sad, I am angry, but I'm confident. We are going to defeat these people, and they have opened the war, they have killed our people, they are going to see what the NRM means in war. All those people who have been sending threatening messages on the social media, we are going to go for them.
Mr. Museveni said the government will install cameras on streets and highways, as well as in homes. He also said police officers will be given more training on how to handle crimes and crime scenes. Museveni said Ugandans have witnessed many gruesome murders, which must come to an end.
They killed some sheikhs, they killed Kawesi, they killed John Kagezi. The other day, a girl, Susan, was kidnapped and killed. Now they have killed Abiriga here. It is time, really, for all of us to wake up and say, stop this. And we have the capacity.
Abiriga rose to prominence as the supporter of the controversial Constitution Amendment Bill that sought to remove age limit for one contesting for the presidency of Uganda. Abiriga said Museveni is the only person capable of ruling Uganda and therefore should lead the country perpetually. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, says that the ruling party, Patriotic Front, is to blame for calls for leadership changes in the group. There have been recent calls for changes in the party's leadership, including the presidential candidate. Hakainde Hichilema has been the presidential candidate for the opposition UPND in the last few elections. He says that calls that the UPND should undergo leadership changes at all levels of the party is a cheap propaganda orchestrated by the ruling PF. But some opposition supporters say that leadership has violated the party's constitution by refusing to hold regular conventions to ensure members contest for positions as enshrined in the constitution. The opposition party says that the ruling PF is behind the plan to destabilize the UPND, insisting that members are aware that a convention will be held when the right time comes. For more on this, VOA's Peter Cloti reached Charles Kakoma, the spokesman for the UPND in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Well, it is strange that the ruling party has taken interest in the leadership of the opposition UPND. It is because they look at the current leadership as a real threat to their continued stay in power. We're giving them a lot of pressure. And they see that with the UPND continuing in power, they'll certainly lose the next general election. That's why they want a leadership change. They want to infiltrate the opposition UPND at the general conference to sponsor their own candidates that can be plants in opposition UPND. That we know their scheme, and we will not allow it to be implemented. Obviously, we have our own convention or general conference when the time comes, when we are ready, but they cannot push us to rush for a general conference to elect our new leaders.
But don't you think some people have the right call, since the UPND has an internal constitution which demands that the party holds regular convention, or possibly test the popularity of Hakainde Hichilema, that indeed this is what the delegates want to challenge Edgar Chagwa Lungu in the next election, which has not happened in the party for quite some time now?
Well, in the past 11 years, we have had two general conferences. The first one that elected Hakainde Hichilema as president, which was followed by an extraordinary convention, which also reaffirmed the election of Hakainde Hichilema. So he has been endorsed twice by the party leadership, and that is sufficient within that time period. What we are waiting for is this current period, whose general conference will be due before 2021, when we have the next general elections for the country.
The Patriotic Front has come out sharply to deny that it is behind calls for a change in leadership in the UPND, and that it is the internal demands by UPND supporters who want a national convention to be held to ensure that the party abides by its own constitution, that it's not violated. How do you respond to that?
Well, there are no UPND supporters who are demanding for that call. It is the PF leadership that have openly gone on television and radio to demand for elections in the opposition UPND, and also using surrogate political parties and non-government organizations to champion that cause. But we know that those NGOs are aligned to the ruling party. Some of the opposition political parties are aligned to the ruling party, and they are using them to make or to demand for such elections in the UPND.
There have been calls by some civil society and opposition groups, including the ruling party, that the UPND cadres are to blame for the recent violence in the by-elections, and because the UPND appears to have lost some of these elections it wanted to win, that is why its cadres or supporters unleash violence against opponents after the vote.
Well, it is a well-known fact that the political violence that was witnessed in the last by-elections in Chilanga near here in Lusaka was sponsored and perpetuated by the ruling party. They are the one that sponsored their thugs, the youth, in buses, carrying machetes, guns, and all sorts of weapons to polling stations. Some of them were even threatening policemen that were manning those polling stations. Some police officers had to fire tear gas to disperse them. So it is a well-known fact that it is the PF for cadres that were behind the spate of violence that we witnessed. We have a video and pictorial evidence of many of our supporters, including polling agents that were assigned to man the polling stations, that were hacked, blood oozing from their heads. And it was at the instance of the ruling PF. So they are just trying to divert attention by shifting the blame to the opposition UPND.
The U.S. is asking that East African governments tighten the loopholes that allow illicit money from South Sudan to cross into regional capitals. The call was made by Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, Sigal Mandeka, on his trip to Kampala, Uganda. Mr. Mandeka said the authorities in neighboring countries like Uganda must reject what he called corrupt money. Researchers say that South Sudanese government officials have invested heavily in real estate in cities such as Kampala, the Ugandan capital, where it is possible to pay cash in real estate transactions. Meanwhile, South Sudan's central bank announced that it will issue higher denomination banknotes to enable citizens. They said that this will help people carry fewer notes as rampant inflation continues to value the local currency. The bank said that it will introduce a 500-pound bill worth $1.5 into circulation this month. Currently, the largest note in circulation is a 100-pound bill. A rescue ship run by a European charity is headed to Spain with more than 600 migrants on board after Italy and Malta refused to accept the vessel. Italy's new government, which campaigned on halting the flow of migrants in through the country, is starting to make good on these promises. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
The European Union and the United Nations Refugee Agency had called for a swift end to a political standoff that left 629 migrants on the rescue ship Aquarius drifting at sea. Spain has now offered to take the ship in after Italy and Malta refused. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez ordered authorities to allow the Aquarius to dock in the eastern port of Valencia. Sanchez's office issued a statement saying, "It is our duty to avoid a humanitarian catastrophe and offer a secure port for these people." More than 100 unaccompanied minors and a number of pregnant women are on board the Aquarius. Six different rescue operations took place over the weekend off the coast of Libya, coordinated by the Italian Coast Guard. Medical workers had said food on board the ship was going to run out by Monday night. Italy's new Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini had said the country would not allow the ship to dock in any of its ports. Italy asked Malta to provide assistance to Aquarius because it was the nearest available port, but the small island nation's Prime Minister, Joseph Muscat, refused. Salvini, who also serves as Italy's interior minister, has promised to change immigration policies in Italy, saying the new Italian government's efforts will be aimed at guaranteeing peaceful lives for Africans in Africa and for Italians in their own country.
L'Italia è un contribuente di organismi internazionali come ONU e NATO.
On a recent visit to the southern port of Pozzallo, where many migrants have been arriving, Salvini said Italy is a member of international organizations such as the UN and NATO. And so he asked, why is it that in the Mediterranean and in North Africa, there is not more concrete intervention to defend security? More than 600,000 migrants have reached Italy by boat from Africa in the past 5 years. The new Italian government, led by Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte, has made it clear that the EU cannot continue to leave Italy to deal with the migrant crisis on its own. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
And that's it for this Tuesday, June the 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending the morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, the reporters Peter Cloti, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good day, Africa.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.